Dear Papa, I can't recall a time I've ever written to you. It's probably because the written word feels too serious. Yet I don't think I could express my sentiments today any other way. After all, at my very core, I am culturally Chinese through and through. There are some things we feel too heavily to audibly invoke. There are some spoken words I do not have. For a few weeks now, I've replayed a conversation we had years ago in my head. To you, it was likely a passing blip in time, as inconsequential as a nod to a stranger. If I described it to you now, there's little chance you'd have any recollection. But it's weaved in and out of my consciousness of late, and recent events have made it impossible to ignore. A few birthdays ago, I came home to see you. Like we do every year, the family waited until around 11 p.m., just after you closed the restaurant. You finally burst through the door in your oil-stained shirt, redolent of the scent of pork fried rice from hours behind the wok. There was cake and candles and food. You, though tired, did what you always do. You mustered up all your energy and filled the house with your booming laughter. A couple shots of Jack, and you began to reminisce about how you spent your prime rocking in 1980s Chinatown, how you animatedly shouted Cantonese in the kitchens, how you refused to shut up like a real Chinese person. But you were different now, you insisted, and you went on to describe how customers come into our joint praising you for not even sounding Chinese. Your accent, stripped down from years in small-town America, had been muddled by the red, white, and blue air. The beaming pride in your face as you said those words remains in my mind to this day, and I've heard something fierce because of it, mostly because I understand. America, in all its glory, has not yet confronted its own hatred toward the very people who push the nation forward. Our tongues remain an audible sign of the past from another land. Accents have been twisted into cultural marks of shame, a foreignness that so many feel has no place from sea to shining sea.
Welcome to Rock the Boat. We're your hosts, Lucia Liu and Lin Gui. Together, we have candid conversations with Asian Americans who are challenging the status quo. We uncover stories about their upbringing, their relationship with family, Asian identity, and their work. In the past, we've interviewed Andrew Yang, Michelle Phan, and the Fung Bros. This season, we're featuring Asian Americans who have overcome challenges against all odds. Join us for our boldest season yet. Today, we sit down with Kimmy Yam, the co-founder of HuffPost Asian Voices and reporter for NBC News. Kimmy has a really strong and thoughtful perspective on all things Asia America. So we're super psyched to get into the conversation with her about her own personal story of growing up as a child of immigrants, and what it was like growing up in a town of mostly white people in upstate New York, and how she eventually became inspired to be a champion for Asian representation in journalism.
I am Kimmy Yam. I co-founded Asian Voices at HuffPost. That's my little baby.
Kimmy isn't afraid to speak her mind online, and she's a fierce advocate for issues that disproportionately affect Asian American communities.
We know Kimmy is super vocal about these issues and her opinions, but how did she get into journalism in the first place?
Well, out of college, Kimmy got some journalism internships and jobs, which is the usual route going into the profession. And for a while, Kimmy worked on good news or impact or solutions journalism. So she wrote a lot of heartwarming things.
And that's great, but there was definitely more that she wanted to do. She kept noticing that there were many different voices, but no Asian voices, kind of like us, Lin. And within all of those current events and issues that she was seeing, there were definitely Asian angles to the stories, but those angles weren't being told.
And eventually, she got to work with a great editor at HuffPost who gave her the space and the trust to create a channel dedicated to Asian voices called Asian Voices. And Kimmy was not about to let this opportunity go to waste. If you haven't read Asian Voices, it's not just a column about the latest Asian movies and TV shows, although those are great for representation, and of course there are articles about that. It's more about what's happening to real Asian people. So, for instance, ICE raids that are looming over our community. Kimmy says there are things happening in less privileged communities that more well-off Asians aren't aware of.
I'm writing for our community, but introducing the mainstream audience. If you hail a cab, it's going to be an Asian person. If you order food, the person delivering your food is going to be an Asian person. You get your nails done, it's going to be an Asian person. Like, it's so weird because you recognize that all of this is around us.
Kimmy isn't afraid to speak her mind online, and she's a fierce advocate for issues that disproportionately affect Asian American communities. But she wasn't always so in tune with this Asian part of her identity.
When I was little, I mean, I was the same as I am now, like a crazy ass troublemaker. But I grew up in a really small town. It was all white. It was like very working class, red, white, and blue town. And we were just one of the very, very few Asian families.
So Kimmy comes from a Chinese restaurant family. They're Fujianese. And for Asians that grow up in predominantly white areas, Kimmy says the stereotype was the model minority. But for Chinese restaurant families, it's a little different. There's a bit of a stigma attached to Chinese restaurants, and what Kimmy says is the polar opposite of what a model minority is. Like, oh, they cook cats and dogs, or they're dirty and don't have manners. And it's those stereotypes that affected Kimmy while she was growing up.
There's just countless instances, I think, of racism or microaggressions or all these different things growing up that definitely made me feel very alone. And I just felt that when you grow up with that, you can't really truly be your authentic self because your entire being is just dedicated to countering everything that everyone ever thinks about you.
Growing up, Kimmy struggled with her appearance and getting made fun of for her eyes. I think a lot of us can relate to that. She had a hard time feeling good about herself and the way she looked.
I used to do ballet like pretty seriously and like hours and hours and hours and hours. And I think one summer I went to camp and I remember someone saying that they absolutely hated the way that my eyes were, like the shape was wrong, like all this. You're not like, oh, this is racism. You're just like, oh, I'm ugly because my eyes look like this and I know they don't look like other white people's eyes. I think that those moments, it's like, when they start happening and you're just like, what, 8 or 9, and the only other references to your race are negative, then there's just no way you're gonna love yourself. There's no way you're gonna love your body. There's no way you're gonna love anything like that. I think I felt a lot of shame then. And then also just that with the idea that Asian Americans were not represented in any realm. So it's not even just Hollywood. In the political sphere or media, it's very rarely going to be an Asian face. So I think with the lack of seeing anyone like me on screen or in media or wherever, plus the fact that so many of these stereotypes attached to, you know, Chinese restaurants, Chinese people, it was very difficult to, you know, cultivate any sort of pride. And I had this conversation going back home with my parents a couple weeks ago, like, man, like I spent my formative teenage years being weird and mad, quiet and shy. That's not who I am. But you don't want to say anything that could make you less accepted. You don't want to do anything that's going to make you seem more Chinese. It's like all these different factors come into it. And then so when I finally got to college, and then you start realizing that Asian Americans just are not two-dimensional, like the media is going to make you think, then I felt myself revert to my original very behaviorally problematic child self. It was a reawakening.
In the beginning of this episode, Kimmy read a letter to her father. It's clear how much she loves him and looks up to him.
He understands how to navigate stuff in a way that I think other people can't. He knows which battles to pick. If I'm going through a heartbreak or something like that, my dad will just be like, remember, and then he'll just like scream, you're the best! And then he's like, oh, like this guy didn't work out, just get another boyfriend. Like for him, it's always just like, it's so simple.
She says her dad really shaped who she is now. Not only did he want to give her confidence to go through life, not caring about what others thought, but he led by example. He was always himself, loud and proud.
I think so much of my personality is just like my pops. Like, he is crazy. So if people think I'm too crazy, that's because blame my parents. There were no rules. His introduction into America was like a very working class kind of deal. His vocabulary is very peppered with a lot of cussing and stuff like that. He's like, you know what? Sometimes you just gotta like drop the F-bomb. You know? It's like, yeah, you're right. Sometimes you do have to drop the F-bomb. You mad?
Is your mom like that too?
No, my mom is. Well, my mom is also crazy.
She's Fujianese as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is the other thing too. It's like, if you're Fujianese, are either of you Chinese?
Yeah, we're both Chinese.
Yeah. So you know the stereotype. It's like, we're just loud as fuck and no manners.
Yeah.
All that. It's all true. Yes. It's all true. I feel like we're just screaming all the time.
That's like our norm.
I think my mom is a little more traditional in that. So he's like, oh, you're so beautiful, but once you drop a bunch of F-bombs, you're just not so pretty anymore. You know, like how people say shit like that. Like,
Another side of her identity is coming from a working class background. She couldn't identify with the Asian American doctors and lawyers that usually make up the model minority crowd. And she hardly even knew people like that until she went to college. All she knew were the other Chinese restaurant families from small towns, like the one she grew up in.
For me, it was so important as a kid from just like a regular ass Asian family. Like, I think that there's this idea that, you know, Asians are, you know, so well educated and blah, blah, blah. But that's like one half of Asian America and the rest of us get no say. I think it is a very different struggle if you're coming up in your parents don't have degrees and they don't have the vocabulary to fight back in any capacity. They don't have the privilege of anything. They're just really just trying to put down roots in the US. And I think to some degree, I was like weirdly ashamed that I was going off to like a fancy ass school because it's just not what we do back home.
Kimmy did go to college and she went to Georgetown. At Georgetown, she aspired to be the next Asian Madeleine Albright because she was interested in US-China relations. In college, though, all of a sudden, she was surrounded by many other Asian Americans. They were proud of who they were and even shamed others for not being proud enough for being Asian. So Kimmy started this process of reclaiming her Asian identity.
It was a cultural awakening for someone from the American small town. It was a different thing where it's like, wow, like I had no idea you were allowed to like your own food. Like, what's a soup dumpling? I have no idea what that is. It was so strange. And so it's a whole process of realizing that you're allowed to do things. I remember in college was when I was introduced to like Angry Asian Man. And you know, I decided for Heritage Month that our coverage would open with a profile of Angry Asian Man, because I do think that there's something about realizing that you are allowed to be angry, that Asian Americans are not basically white. You are allowed to be angry. And I think for many of us, the first time that we realized that this was a thing, that you can have agency over your own anger, was through Angry Asian Man.
Another part of this reclaiming process is just feeling better about her body. Besides getting made fun of at ballet, Kimmy also had a tough relationship in which her boyfriend body-shamed her, just made her feel negatively about her own body. That insecurity affected her relationship with her appearance, even to this day. She tells us that she still has days where she absolutely hates her body.
It's really one of those things that if you've internalized those negative conceptions of yourself, no amount of praise or positive signals from other people will ever really get rid of it. And it doesn't really matter if Kimmy is beautiful, which she is, she doesn't feel like she can think of herself that way.
Kimmy is also really open about how this fuels her depression and anxiety. And it's something that's difficult to discuss in the Asian American community, as we've talked about in previous episodes. But she feels that it's important for her to be super upfront about.
I understand that my reputation is like, okay, she's a tough bitch that she can take whatever. But I realized after a while that if I'm not talking about this other side, that is giving people very, very false representation of who I am. And I don't want other little girls growing up thinking that they have to be tough and that they can't have feelings and that the crying or like feeling down or feeling whatever way is a weakness, because it's not. I had extremely horrible depression up until I graduated college, and then for just a couple years I was free. And so that's why I think there's some modicum of hope that I have that, you know, every time I have like a really, really low dip, I'm like, okay, is this it? Like, this sucks. I don't know. But I always like keep trying because I just remember there was like a good 3 years where I felt so free. And I was like, this must be what the rest of the population feels.
Kimmy says she's tried therapy. And though that's a valid route for many people, it hasn't really worked for her.
And I know for me, when it comes to anxiety, if I'm having like a serious attack or something like that, I can't talk through it. But for me, definitely medicine is where it's at. I need that. And I think that there's such a stigma that if you're taking some type of drug, then you are a drug addict.
Kimmy says that there is definitely still a stigma against taking medication for mental health reasons in Asian culture.
It's funny because a lot of times in Western society, I feel like when people talk about depression or mental illness to any degree, it's not seen as quite as serious as it is like a physical illness. But I think in the Asian American community, it's actually seen as so much worse that if you have a mental illness. I did some reporting on mental illness. One of the experts had told me that a lot of especially elderly Asian Americans who come in for help, they'll describe their ailment as a very physical one, and they'll say, my stomach hurts, or I can't sleep, or something like that, when truly they're going through trauma or depression. That is how it manifests itself in our community.
I really like that Kimmy points out that in the Asian American community, people who may be suffering from depression or anxiety go to their doctors and describe it in physical symptoms.
Yeah, it's just a much more concrete way of describing it. That's the best way we can wrap our heads around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like it's not a real illness until you have physical symptoms of it.
Which is scary.
Yeah, because when you have physical symptoms of it, that's when it's sort of too late.
Do you ever feel like focusing on Asian Americans is too niche for mainstream media?
I still think that, you know, there is no say for working class Asian Americans. I wrote this profile on Jose Antonio Vargas. My main goal with that was just to show Jose does a ton of interviews. He does interviews all the time. And none of them talk about his Asian-ness. And I'm just like, but that doesn't make sense because if we're the fastest growing undocumented population over a 15-year period, the size of our undocumented population is going to triple. And he's there and he's a representative. How are we not talking about this? And the very first immigration laws that discriminated against people based on race, ethnicity, religion, whatever, was targeting Asian people with the Chinese Exclusion Act. When we talk about immigration and these big ass issues in this country, you can't ignore Asian Americans, but we have. And so media doesn't get it right still.
It's unclear if media is choosing to ignore Asian Americans or if Asian Americans just don't quite fit into the narrative of mainstream media. For example, Andrew Yang is ranked 6th in the polls out of 19 Democratic candidates. He ranks 4th in the number of tweets during the debates, but he places 13th and 14th in media mentions and cable news mentions. Similarly, when Chanel Miller went public about her identity in the Brock Turner case, in which the Stanford swimmer sexually assaulted the inebriated Chanel and was only sentenced to 6 months in prison, when he faced up to 14 years in prison, the media didn't give much thought to the fact that Chanel was half Chinese. Going back to Jose Antonio Vargas and his story on undocumented Asian immigrants, no one acknowledged he was Asian either. Jose wrote a book called Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen.
The book is out now. The cover is a bright yellow, and in it he tells his story of finding out he was an undocumented immigrant.
He told me he made it yellow because it's supposed to symbolize unapologetically that this is an Asian story, and still nobody wanted to cover it. I remember this one sentence that he wrote, and it was beautiful. It's talking about how the day that he found out that he was an undocumented immigrant, his grandfather Lolo was soaked in shame. And I remember that phrase so well because it's like, this is just what every Asian American will understand. It's like, shame is what unites us all. That's what it is. And so he talks about feeling distant from his mother in the Philippines and all these different things. And it's like, so much of this is him wrestling with his identity. How are people ignoring it?
Kimmy is driven by this need to tell the Asian side of that story.
It makes total sense to her that these stories should be told, that they should have a place, and they can change how Asians are talked about in news and media. This sometimes inevitably draws the attention of trolls.
It's interesting with Kimmy that in her teens, when people said something that either offended her or made her feel bad, she withdrew. But now in her 20s, and as the editor of this channel dedicated to Asian voices, she's fighting back, and she is loud and proud about being Asian and her opinions. And of course, this kind of boldness draws the worst in Twitter, and Kimmy's had her fair share of Twitter wars.
When I post things, though, like, people get mad. Like, I've somehow become, like, a very, very clear target for white supremacists and really salty men. But I think that it's weird because I think a lot of people can go through life and not necessarily get such blatant racism, but like I do on the daily, there's going to be someone writing to me that's super mad about what I'm doing. And on top of that, it's like if you're a tough bitch, like people really hate seeing Asian women like that because they thought you were going to be good and play by the rules. Like I'm not very sweet or quiet or any of those things. Like I am just this, and as much as I want to be like, okay, I'm gonna tone it down, I can't. I absolutely cannot, as a human being, do that. The comments that get me the most, honestly, are like, I get a lot of sexual comments because Asian women just in general get a lot of those, but like when people are mad at me, they just turn into like disgusting sexual things. And I think a lot of people are like, I bet you're fucking all these white guys to like gain acceptance from the white community or something like that, which is just, it's, there's no good way to respond to that. There's absolutely no good way to respond to that because first of all, I believe that you can sleep with whoever you want.
Kimmy tells us about one incident where she talked about yellow fever in a tweet.
I'm not targeting a certain person. When I say like people with yellow fever, it's like I'm specifically calling out people who fetishize Asian women and dehumanize us. Like, that's fucked up. It doesn't matter what your views are, whatever. Like, that is wrong. Period. Point blank. When I sent that tweet out, I remember there was a couple people tagging, like, revenge porn sites and things like this. And it was weird because it's a flood of people that are trying to make you feel like you said something wrong when they're the ones who are wrong. And so, but when you hear it over and over and over, it does make me think like, oh, should I think a little bit more before I tweet? But I'm never going to tweet something racist. I'm never going to tweet something offensive or whatever. And you think back and you're like, holy shit, like, why am I questioning anything that I say? This is just wrong is wrong is wrong is wrong. Nobody should make me feel that way.
Kimmy does get fed up with the trolls. It's frustrating that they bring up her personal life. It's as if that is the last and ultimate weapon in the trolls' arsenal, which can be hurtful because at the end of the day, we're all just human.
I just want people to leave me alone and keep my vagina out of all of this. Like, just don't talk about it anymore.
For some Asian girls who grow up thinking that they have to be super tough just to counter stereotypes, they don't really give themselves much space for emotion.
At the end of the day, my job is just a journalist. So it's someone who reports the truth and what they see and their observations. So my appearance and who I date or any of that should never be part of the conversation. And somehow it always is. And I think I get a lot of hate from Asian men too, who like think that I'm sleeping with a lot of white guys. I don't know, but it's just like, there is no winning when it comes to a position like this. It's very, very strange.
Although other people of color have been supportive of the Asian American community, especially for movies like Crazy Rich Asians and more recently The Farewell, Kimmy does make the point that it's not enough for only POC, people of color, to consume POC media.
I know that there are also a lot of people, a lot of white people who need to start consuming POC media. Like, just watch Fresh Off the Boat, like, just once. Like, see what it's like. There's a perception that things are, like, too ethnic or too foreign or whatever for them to digest so that they're not going to read the news. I also feel that editors out there, like, white editors, people in positions of power need to understand in order to be a really, really good editor. You're going to read all the news. You're not just going to read what's easy, what comes in front of you. If you have Asian people working for you, or you have someone who's interested in covering Asian Americans, read about Asian America. You're not going to understand our issues. You're still going to have this idea that it's not important enough. And then also within our community, like, yeah, it's cool to be like, oh, that's like a hot ass Asian man, and yay, we're like excited about that. But at the same time, it's more than that. Like, when you talk about representation, let's not just say, oh, there's like an Asian lead. That's not the point. We have to do better. Like, are people covering pockets of Asian America that need help, that need representation, that reflect our stories in a certain way? You have to go deeper than that. It's not about whether something got whitewashed or not. And it's not just about that. That is very important. But I think that the next step is getting deeper into these conversations. If we are going to humanize ourselves, we can't think about how to live our lives based on stereotypes.
I like that Asian Voices is targeting a mainstream audience. I think it's important. You know, these stories are not just for Asian readers, they're for everyone. And the stories are all part of the American story. They just haven't had a platform before.
And I agree that it's not just about the writers pushing upwards, saying that, you know, we need to cover this story from this particular angle, but that editors should get themselves educated and familiar with all the communities that they serve as well.
Yeah, and it's not about what has normally been covered. It's about finding what hasn't been covered and giving it the light of day. Because there are stories that aren't being covered that deserve to be heard.
There may be a day when young Asian Americans can grow up seeing people like them on the news, on TV, running for office, telling their own stories. And I think that world is already beginning to emerge. So maybe fewer people will have to go through this reclaiming process that Kimmy and so many of us have had to do while growing up.
Yeah. And, you know, to circle back to Kimmy's upbringing, Kimmy told us about how she tried to be more open to her parents' perspectives and experiences. She realizes that they also had a really tough time and may not have known how they could have helped her. They were always just trying to survive and provide for her.
We go through so much pain, and then we kind of blame our parents and are like, yo, why the fuck did you not do something to, like, help me or whatever. But then you have to remember, like, they were going through some shit too, you know? And I think about all the time, I think I discounted everything that they had to go up against. I'm hurting a lot, but, like, they were too. I need to say sorry for all the things that I put them through, because it's been a lot too. And I think one thing that Asian America right now is really, really missing is that extra layer of empathy. That when we talk to our parents, like, when I'm talking to my pops, if he says something that's like sexist or whatever, well, am I gonna get mad at that? Like, he doesn't have an education. He is literally behind a wok. He is still behind a wok. He's still working at the restaurant. Is he gonna come home and read about the different waves of feminism and suddenly come up with the right vocabulary to describe shit? Like, no.
Kimmy's also trying to be more open to perspectives of people like the ones who made fun of her eyes. Those who live in small town America.
I think it's difficult to be woke because wokeness is a privilege. I went to fucking Georgetown, man. Like, I'm going to learn shit. Like, I'm going to have a vocabulary where you can see, like, oh, this is a microaggression, this is whatever. But it is a privilege.
Being woke is a privilege. Powerful words to end on. So at the end of our interview, we asked Kimmy our signature closer question. What does it mean for her to rock the boat?
I think for Asian Americans now, it's just like, be your most authentic self and feel happiness and feel joy and don't feel tethered to some type of white male dominated narrative. So many of us, whether they realize it or not, have lived in some way trying to either counter stereotypes or follow stereotypes or whatever it is. I think that we're at a time where you have to live the most freely. And it's tough to do that. And I think that there's a lot of privilege that comes with that, because I think a lot of our communities are still under attack. I just want people to know, don't try to change yourself. Don't try to be something else. Just like do your own thing. And that in itself is badass and subversive and incredible, and just be free.
Kimmy recently followed her own advice and left HuffPost to report at NBC Asian America, where she's able to have more freedom and report on the policy issues she really cares about.
I think people should make some sort of change. And I think that maybe perhaps I was scared of it before, and maybe, you know, I was looking for the right opportunity. But I'm happy where I am right now for the first time in like a really long time.
I like that Kimmy points out that Asian Americans often try in some way to counter or follow the stereotypes. But we should try to get beyond those stereotypes. If you like soup dumplings, so what? If you like country music, so what? If you like Jay Chou, good for you.
Or I'm judging you. Anyway, I really enjoyed our conversation with Kimmy. I highly recommend you all following her on social media. She's very, very active. We'll include her handle at Kimmy the Pooh in our show notes. And with that, thanks for tuning in.
See you all next time. Thanks for tuning in to Rock the Boat. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes and help spread the word about the podcast. We really appreciate your help.
Thanks to our writer, Rochelle Kwan, for writing this episode. Rochelle is a facilitator and storyteller for StoryCorps by day and a disco dancer by night.
Kessel Lim is our assistant producer. Debbie Wong and Kim Hernandez are our social media coordinators. And Rachel Chu is our sound editor. Be sure to follow us on social media at RockTheBoatNYC.